Hi, this is Amy, and in this episode, AADL talks to Mary Stewart Adams. Mary Adams is a storyteller, astrofer, and program director for Headlands International Dark Sky Park, a 600-acre park in Michigan's Emmett County. Mary was also instrumental in securing the recent passage of Michigan Public Act 251 that establishes a dark sky preserve in Michigan. On her way to a signing ceremony with Michigan Governor Rick Snyder, Mary stopped in to chat about the passage of the act and the importance of storytelling and dark skies. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming. I understand you are on your way north to meet Governor Snyder today.
Today.
A signing ceremony relating to the recently passed Michigan Public Act 251 that established a dark sky preserve in northern Michigan.
Yes. The legislation deals with more land than it is in northern Michigan. I should say that first. It includes an area that's in the tip of the thumb and also in south central Michigan. But it's about 23,000 acres that have been protected. 21,000 of those acres are in northern Michigan. So most of the land is up north.
Now, you're the program director for the Dark Sky Park up there, which is how many acres?
The Headlands, it's the International Dark Sky Park, and it's 600 acres, and that's a county park. So I worked with Emmett County, Michigan, and the International Dark Sky Association to establish that designation and to protect that land. And then out of that, the popularity of that and the tremendous response that we got from the public, that generated this interest in some local community members as well as our state representative, Frank Foster, to sponsor legislation at the state level to protect more of the land that's up there.
So what is the difference between a dark sky park and a dark sky preserve? What does it...
Well, according to the International Dark Sky Association, they have different levels or different designations. To be a preserve is different than being a park, which is different than being a dark sky community. So we call the Headlands a dark sky park according to the criteria of the International Dark Sky Association. That's just the county owns the park, so the county is following the criteria of the IDA. The state is doing this protection of its own. They aren't seeking the sanction of the International Dark Sky Association, but now they've passed this public act that says we will protect all of this land from light trespass and light pollution. And the legislation and the wording of it is based on some of the criteria that come from the IDA, just to make it confusing.
How do you enforce that? What is it that – is it just basically these are the limits or this is the designation? This is how you can handle lighting in a particular area?
Well,
or is it more than that?
Well, as I said, the IDA has criteria about, all right, if you want to qualify as a dark sky place, we'll just call it that, then there has to be a master lighting plan. There has to be an inventory of all the light, and then anything that's not according to the standard that needs to be present in a dark sky place, which means it's fully shielded, the lights, any lights that are used are fully shielded and cut off at a horizontal plane, only shining down, nothing spilling up, a certain wattage,
like
15
degree angle.
There's very specific criteria there. And then also the governing body of the land in question has to create what we did in Emmett County is create an ordinance specific to that piece of property that's more strict than the general lighting ordinance that's throughout the county. Then I also had to go out and use this little mechanism called a sky quality meter to measure the dark. And it's this funky little thing that's got an eyeball type piece on the top, and you just press a button and it's not a beam that goes up, but it measures how far it can go before it bumps into any kind of light that would be polluting the sky. And that's the way the IDA, one of the things they use to determine, all right, here's how dark it is here. So they have three different levels. They have bronze, silver, and gold level dark sky places. So really, you could do a dark sky place in Ann Arbor. And it might not be as dark as it is in northern Michigan, but what it means is that you have an intentional community that plans to protect the night sky in that place as best you can. So this is land that's owned by Emmett County, so no private landowners are affected. They can choose to participate, again, with the state land. It's state park and state forest land up there, so they're not imposing anything on private landholders. We want people to be acting in compliance. And we have the very good advantage that people who live up that way are living there because they want to be in the wilderness. They want to be where it's dark and in a natural environment. So there's not a lot of light pollution happening.
So there are no homeowners or businesses within this designation that you...
Not within the designation, but between the Headlands International Dark Sky Park and, say, the entrance to Wilderness State Park, yeah. There is private land. But again, all those folks are really happy about what's happening. And to borrow a very tired cliche, it does take a community to protect the night sky because one errant light can knock out a lot of visibility.
So can you tell us a little bit about how difficult it was, or was it? It sounds like you have a lot of support. Was it easier to pull everybody together?
I'm from Michigan, have lived here all my life. I moved to northern Michigan about 10 years ago. And immediately started working at the community college and in the schools and writing for the paper, just telling the stories of the night sky, all about the cultural history of humanity relative to star belief and how that informs the way we organize ourselves socially and religiously. And you can find the stars behind just about everything that human beings do. And I was doing that work for several years when I bumped into an organization called the Outdoor Lighting Forum. And this was a group that was started by Mary Lou Tanton, and she, in the middle of the 1990s, got involved with signs and lighting and the organization called Scenic Michigan, which is the state chapter of a national organization that deals with billboards and lighting along the highways and byways of the country, so it's not too cluttered. And she was working locally at a local effort to make sure that there was some kind of integrity and responsibility on the part of land developers with regard to outdoor lighting so that we weren't polluting the environment. And so I kind of found her, or she found me actually, and said, would you come and speak at one of our programs? And here I am, the storyteller, and I'm talking to county commissioners and planning and zoning people and telling them that, you know, we're losing the night sky not only because we can't see it, but because we're losing the imagination of the stories and what it has to do with us. And out of that relationship, there was another person that joined us who was working with the county who said, hey, we've got this park up there. Maybe we could start doing some programs up there. And this would have been in maybe 2006, 2007. And then out of this conversation between the three of us, we decided, let's try to get this protected. So I approached the International Dark Sky Association and asked them how we go about this. Then I went to the Emmett County Board of Commissioners and said, I would like to get this designation for this piece of land. And they kind of scratched their heads and said, well, what's a dark sky park? You know, are there rides? You say park and people think amusement. And really, it's just about protecting a dark wilderness so you can go in and enjoy what's naturally there. And it took us a couple of years to get, not to convince everybody, but just to gather the letters of nomination, the letters of support, inform the community, continue to do the programming, and then do the lighting inventory, write the ordinance, submit ultimately a 75-page document that demonstrated to the International Dark Sky Association that we were a committed community and here was our plan to going forward. And in May of 2011, we got the designation. I should say that also Emmett County was in unanimous support of this the whole way. And now it's one of their leading economic development factors, this dark sky park. So it's really been a tremendous thing that's happened in our community. And out of that, then, the local townships and other people within the county are also very interested in getting involved. And now we have the state getting involved, and it just keeps going. It's really exciting.
So people are coming up from all over, just visit
yes.
the dark sky. Can you talk a little bit about what the programming that you're doing up there?
As I said, the kind of programming that I do as a star lore historian and a ceremonialist is all about trying to recognize the story that we're telling now about the night sky. The human being is physiologically capable of seeing about 10,000 things in the night sky, is the statistic that you read. But with our computers and telescopes and satellites, we can identify over 900 million. And the jump from 10,000 to 900 million has not been a jump in consciousness. We're not really aware of what we're finding, so we're telling a story about it. But usually it's the scientists that are telling that story, and not to diminish that at all. That's one perspective on what it is. So I'm standing up there in that dark wilderness saying, you know, we can do the once upon a time or understand that we are creating a certain mythology that belongs to our culture. So all of the programming that I do comes out of that idea. So it integrates both what former cultures believed, the indigenous cultures in that area, and then also how does that interface with where we are now? But then we also have programs on astrophotography. We do invite astronomers out with telescopes, and you know, we do that part of it as well. So we're not limited to my own bias, but I do have a bias. So.
Well, now back again, just to a little bit to the issue of light pollution. So if I took my telescope, I could go out to the headlands and I could use it till all hours?
Yes, the park is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You can't camp there. There are no camping facilities. You can camp at Wilderness State Park. Let me get that one out. But you can stay there overnight. I mean, you can get out there. If you need to see something that's happening at 4 o'clock in the morning, you can be there. We do not yet have telescope pads, and we are on the shore. Yeah. And it is a forested area. So it's 600 acres mainly of forest. There's 5 miles of trails and paths going through that area. But then there are two structures that are on the shoreline where there's a dark sky viewing area where there are some benches. And we have a concept plan that we're beginning to put into place that allows us to build an amphitheater, to fix the man-made pier that was there, to kind of create an observing deck out there, and also to put in some telescope pads.
So I could go about 6 miles to Wilderness State Park, and I could camp there.
Yes.
And that's within the new
now,
designation.
By the state, yes.
But how do you keep your fellow campers from – you can't really keep them from using their flashlights or bringing out a flood.
Right. So it's all about raising awareness, and particularly with the state land. It's really about getting into the parks and saying, okay, if you're in a protected dark sky area, here's the courteous behavior. And so this is just a first step that then allows us to have those conversations. And we have the great good fortune of working with Tom Bailey, who's the executive director of the Little Traverse Land Conservancy, who also sits on the governor's State Park Blue Ribbon panel. So he brought his whole panel to Northern Michigan to learn about the dark sky movement, and now that's kind of being integrated into the state park program. So it's not just here's the protected land, but it's throughout the park system. We can begin to talk about, oh, well, this is a really ideal place to celebrate the night sky. And if you're doing this, then here are the practices. But you can't really force people to participate.
But you could have a handout or something that you give people camping at Wilderness State Park that says,
yes,
you know,
and
at
we work with Wilderness. I work with the program director there to do programs. And oftentimes they're bringing groups from Wilderness up to Headlands. Like you said, it's just a few miles away to come to our programming. And once people get turned on to it, then the lights go off. It's really exciting.
Well, and you have the backing now of so many people and a general wave of enthusiasm and legislation.
Yes.
But do you have any advice for, you know, how to deal with your neighbor who has a floodlight automatic floodlight that comes on?
The first thing really is to go look at your own house and to say, okay, what kind of outdoor lighting do I have? Is it the amount of light that I need? Do I need it? Is it on at the time that I need? Is it positioned where it needs to be? Light trespass is a huge thing. And what that means is the light that you're using is trespassing beyond the boundaries either of your own property or the area where you need it. When you think about the human eye, and as you get older, this transition between contraction and expanding with the pupil happens more slowly. So adjusting to night vision can take a long time. And if you're in the dark and all of a sudden you walk into a blob of white light, the eyeball really contracts, the pupil contracts, and then it takes a long time to adjust again to the dark. So really we need a more gradual lighting that's not really, really bright. I have a friend up north who calls it insecurity light, the big lights that we have to light up the night. So, I mean, you have to be a good neighbor. You can't go with a BB gun and shoot out their light. But you hear that a lot as a potential solution. And I think maybe sharing information about, hey, look at what the state of Michigan is doing. Here's information about a dark sky park, coming to a library, hosting a program on good outdoor lighting that really isn't pointing fingers at the bad things that people are doing, because we really do bump into one another's fears. And even when you're storytelling, you bump into people's religious beliefs. And it's really, it's a beautiful environment to be in, but we're kind of hemmed in by these things that happen in our culture that make us afraid of the dark and afraid of one another. And that's why what thrills me the most about this is the stars have shown up. And that's a testament to the fact that there's a strong community of people here saying, yeah, we still want this.
It does seem as though there are more and more people interested in this particular topic. I don't know if that's true or if that's just my perspective.
It does. It really is. It's gaining momentum. When we got our designation, we were the 6th International Dark Sky Park in the United States, only the 9th in the world, and there have been at least 2 more since us. And of course, it's great to be rare and unusual, but it would be wonderful if the whole country was a dark sky park. And there are countries that are looking at that and designating huge tracts of land. Yeah. As dark sky protected area. And when you can see the stars in that kind of a place, it's so inspiring and so restorative to our sense of self as human beings. That's what we need.
You're coming in September, Friday, September 21st, for a program here at the library.
Yes.
That's the night before the equinox.
Yes.
Can you tell me what we can look forward to?
Yeah, well, as I said, I'm a storyteller of the stars. And so I really hope to tell some stories about the night sky in that particular season. And also some of the cultural tales about why, say, in the Christian tradition, they put a festival of the dragon slayer right there. It's definitely connected with what's happening in the night sky, but most people don't realize that. So to kind of tease that out of both our fairy tales and what's happening in the sky, so that there's always a connection between kind of our own amusements and our own entertainment in reading, and then what we can see overhead. Because I think there's nothing more lovely than being able to tell a story under the stars, really. Kind of sounds sappy, but it's really important to have a once upon a time when you're in the dark.
To learn more about Mary Stuart Adams, visit fairytalemoons.com. Music for this episode was Dodecahedron by Greg Williams, which you can find on the AADL catalog by going to aadl.org/magnitude. AADL Talks to Mary Stuart Adams is a production of the Ann Arbor District Library.